Mr. Cutter, reel 5. Now, we're talking about the matadors that you picked up when you were at Mina. I believe they didn't have a limber, did they? They carried the shells on the...
On the vehicle itself, yes. There were 60 shells on the vehicle itself. It could possibly work out with about 3 tons, because each shell was just under 100 years. And of course, once we got up the death into action, you had all the men, 10 men on the gun crew, all their equipment. We had a spare wheel for the matador, a spare wheel for the gun, picked shells to use all the equipment that you needed, a 40-gallon drum of water which you weren't allowed to touch, 40-gallon drum of diesel for the vehicle itself, and all your rations, etc. Of course, that weight alone made the tyres heat up and build up a pressure, which meant at night before we lagged down or anything else, we'd been travelling, we had to let the air out of the tyres in case it burst. And of course, the next morning when you woke up, you see you come round to the vehicle, check your tyres was pretty flat. But luckily, and a good thing, that was a good point about the matador, was I had a compressor on the vehicle, worked off the gearbox, so the burn your tyres pressure in, which is a very good thing. Yes.
Now, so you were really pleased with that. The South Notts battery, as it was at Mina, was you joined B Troop, had you?
B Troop, yes.
And whose gun were you put on at first?
B Troop F subsection.
And you were put on Harper's?
B Troop F subsection gun, yes. Yes. Harold Harper, he was the number one.
Now, I know you've been lifelong friends with Harold Harper, yes. But what was your first impression of Harold when you met him out there in the desert?
Good, very good. We all got we got on very well, because evidently was in those same as Jory Green. He put himself into the environment, not just the word, the atmosphere. You know, and get yourself put into them. You got them very well straight away. No trouble at all. No argument. Poor, very likeable person.
What was he like as a sergeant?
A good man, a good sergeant.
Was he strict?
Well, not really, but if he gave an order, everybody done it, because that was his position. But when we got into action, Harold Harper and I, we had a thing worked out between us, and I used to get him to jump, instead of taking our lines off zero lines, I used to get Harold...
I'll come back, because that's getting on into action, yeah. What about the other men in F subsection? Do you remember any of their names or characters?
Well, the only other man I remember at the moment was Harriman, George Harriman, who was a good leader.
What was
very quiet and a good lad as well. And of course, there was another lad there, my man called Bill Glamour, who lives down in Hastings. The rest of the Europeans, I just can't remember at the moment. But there were 10 men in the gun crew altogether.
Now, what about the Troop Sergeant Major, which early on would have been Lamb? What was Lamb, he?
Well, he was a very easy enough chap to get on with. Pretty good man, yes. The Sergeant was in arm, yes.
And some of the, officers, and I just mentioned them to you. Dobson was your troop leader.
Well, he was a good man, Eric Dobson. He came from up here.
What was he like?
Well, he was always forward on a very good, quiet man, unassuming man, a really good man. And the commander of the troop then was a man called Arthur Birkin.
It says in the book it was Laborde early on, but you don't remember. Ivor Birkin was the one you remember first.
Arthur Birkin was...
What was Ivor like, Ivor Birkin?
He was very well able to get on with him, a likeable chap. In fact, he took the move very well. And he had a... Because he lost his brother Peter in the Battle of Knightsbridge. He'd been taken prisoner and escaped. And he made his way back to the regiment. And he was commanding, he was the troop commander. Actually, the troop commander was Arthur Birkin. And he had a man at the post, Lieutenant Robert Foles. He was up on the OP as well. Was this other sergeant, the bombardier then, Ken Giles. All very good, likeable people, and I got them very well. With all of them.
Right from the start.
Right from the start. No quabbles, no nothing. You had to work as a team. And we worked as a team right from the start.
What about Jones, the original battery commander?
Major Jones. No, I can't remember much about that. I remember him, but not very, very much about him.
Now, you were moving...
The likes of that, you see, they were mostly HQ, you see, headquarters. So we were a troop. And it's very, very... You know, you occasionally saw these people, right? But the orders came down from them, you see. They were very, very rare. You weren't in... In other words, you weren't in contact with these... The likes of those people every day, such as your troop commander.
Right, now, you were moving up. There's supposed to have been a bit of a celebration the last night near Cairo. Do you remember that? A bit of a drunken one. So you moved up into... you were moving up into the desert. What do you remember about the move up?
Well, there's nothing spectacular about it. Just straight up the coast road up to Al-Amin because we were going up there to support and did. Support and join the 9th Australian Division. Al-Amin, where we got dug in.
And you were also, by then, working with the 7th Medium. You were part of the 7th. What impression did you have of them on your first?
Very good. Good men, because they'd been up the desert actually right from the beginning. Because at one time they were the only Medium regiment in the desert, you see, that's when they had the six-pounder, six-inch gun, and the six-inch gun. And then they got the 4.5s. And when we joined, you see, we were near the 5.5s.
And they were regulars.
They were regular troops, yes.
Did that make a difference to the way they behaved or treated you or acted?
Not really. We were just as good as soldiers as them. Because we'd been acting before. And we were feeling exactly just the same. We all got them very, very well.
Now, you took up a position on the coast. What do you remember of that position?
We're on the coast with the 9th Australian Division. As a matter of fact, we see only what 100, 200 yards from the edge of the Union Sea. And of course, we had a good dig in.
How did you go about digging in? Because it's a bit of a job with such big guns and matadors.
Well, there was no bulldozer or nothing in them days. It was all just done by the spades. It was all manual work, all dug in by hand with the spades. Of course, when you're in soft sand, the little spades were hard, you know, you were throwing one spade full out and there was two spades full going back in. Terrible long job. And then, of course, on top of that, we put the instrument netting up, the camouflage netting up, because we're going to be in a permanent position for a while.
And you'd help, even as a driver, you'd help with all this?
We'd all got to work together, yes.
Now, so what was a typical day like when you got into your position?
Well, once you get the position, you do a bit of there was no gun to that, because you were in action then. If there was any orders or any enemy sighted, orders came down from the OP, and of course you'd go to action. Then at night, each gun in turn will have its turn of what they call harassing fire, which means it's just two or three rounds every hour just to keep the enemy on his toes, you know, from different guns, from different positions, so he couldn't pick position up with one particular gun.
How did that involve you as a driver?
Well, we all together, we all used to cook and eat together. And then mostly the driver, if he was near the gun, he used to generally do a little bit of cooking, or, well, there was no cooking to do, actually, but make up what brew we had. The driver generally used to do that, he's the men.
Now, well, that's interesting. What food were you making up for them? What did you get in at that time?
Well, actually, it was mostly just the corned beef.
Bully
beef. Fresh meat and bread, fresh meat and bread we never saw for 3 years, I can honestly say that. It was corned beef for breakfast, night, dinner, tea, you mentioned the corned beef. Fried, boiled, cooked. Sometimes when you opened the tin, it came out like water. In fact, to the present day, this is how we get the word pommies, you know, the pottage, what's it called? It depends on you, this is how we get the word, this is where the word pods come from. Because the biscuits were hard there, when you looked at them, they were just the same shape and size as the cream cracker biscuits. They were about 3 inches of one stick. But when you bit them, you lost all your teeth, they were so hard. So what the men used to do, put them into a tin, steep them with water all night, and the next morning just mash them up, and that was more or less the only way you had to do that in the evening, because as I said, you bit them, you practically go to the teeth, they were so hard. And that's what they used to call it, all the pods.
What other rations would you get? You got biscuits and bully.
Biscuits and bully nuts. Now in India, which was very, very, very rare, the quartermaster used to come when he'd been down maybe way back or centre Cairo, and you could go and buy your tin of food. And that was about it, day after day after day.
So there was no fresh fruit or vegetables?
No fresh bully nuts.
Did they give you any supplements, vitamins or...
Well, you were on
ascorbic acid.
No, actually, what you got to do was medline tablets. Medline tablets, that was for to keep your space really healthy. In fact, talking about grub, after the when we started to advance.
So during this static period, she got there in July. It's really that up to Alamena we're talking about. What about water and drink? What we had to drink?
Well, the only water that was from the water cart. You used to go back to a well somewhere. You know, just sugar chlorine in the water. And that was your ration for the day. Oh, how long was it?
How was it issued? Was it issued to each man or issued to a gun team?
Well, it was more issued to a gun team.
And how would you serve? Would it be given to them as water or as tea?
Water. So you just have a sit now again because you don't too much more to everything you
have. What about tea? Did you get any tea? I mean,
well,
the drink?
We used to make our own tea and that. You know, the old petrol cans, just fill them up with sand, put some petrol in there, like with the boiler kettle or an old tin can or whatever you had, just to make a cup of tea and that was that.
Anything else you...
There was no substantial... meals, you know, a real good dinner. Absolutely nothing like that. Nothing at all.
Did you have any problems with, like, scurvy or spots or...?
Well, I didn't. I remember there was one or two chaps got malaria. Because, you know, being on the coast, they had the mosquitoes and that. Looking about. They had the nets. Mosquito nets were very, very rare where they wore them. More or less getting immune to the bites and all that, you know, so...
What about sand sores? You know, that's... desert sores.
That was an everyday. Because it's that, you know, your lips all swollen and dry and then cracked. And that, you know, just one of those things you just wouldn't happen. Because everything, even when... If you had a meal, if you had your tin, if you dish, you smell, you know, so they held it out. It was covered with sand or sort of dust. That was just an everyday occurrence. You just took it for granted. You know, there was no such a thing as where he was sitting home. To me, just sat there along the gun or on the wagon anywhere.
Were flies a problem?
No flies. Well, there's flies, millions of them, terrible. You know, didn't matter where you went. But near absolutely nothing, but met with millions of flies. And of course the ants, millions of ants, who were parading up the ant parade. Actually, so many of them had made tracks actually in the sand. And of course you had the little desert snakes, and of course the scorpions. Well, the scorpions, when Jerry was showing you, you just took it to finish, you just took no notice of it. If someone mentioned there was a scorpion in the camp, the whole camp was up. Because they were a worry. And the only way you could get was pour a bit of petrol and set fight them off in between your boots to kill them, because if you just pressed them in the ground, you just came up again.
So you found all these in the positions around, you know, before El Alamein, they were all in the area.
All over the desert.
Did you do anything to try and get rid of the flies?
Absolutely possibly you couldn't. Couldn't do anything about it. No. Just one of the parts of life.
Now, What about latrines? What did you do for in the positions before El Alamein? The fixed position.
Well, the fixed position was just ordinary, what's called the ordinary boat. You just dug a hole and had a batten across. And the surround, canvas surround, that was that. And line, put line in the middle of the water.
Was latrine discipline enforced, you know, that you had to go there if you were going?
Well, more or less, well, yes. Otherwise, we'd be spreading disease all over the place.
Did you have to dispose of sort of rubbish tins carefully as well?
Tins and that as well, where you could bury them, yes. Just if you were actually the target somewhere, you just had the spear, and you just dig a hole and just bring your business on the sand, what was that?
So, when you were acting as cook, what other duties would you do for your gun team or during the day, a typical day?
Well, just the same as you go, just rather than sitting and whacking by yourself, you'd be with the gun, just give them a hand, you'd work them on the gun, just give them a hand if you wanted to. And you'd have to remind them, that's all. You could cook your team for the last now and again. That was just an everyday routine.
Now, the guns would just be static there, so there'd be very little for you to do of driving. If they were firing, would you go back with the Matador to get more ammunition, or would someone bring it up to you?
No, actually, what we should do, when we drop the gun into action or into a position, and so many rounds taken off the Matador, and dropped at the gun, and maybe just 30 or 40 rounds, you see, which left you sitting with about 20 on the vehicle. Of course, if they ran out of that, we had to then go back, bring the Matador into the position, and get the rest off, you see, and get reloaded again by from the ammunition vehicles, which was in the echelon, you see.
But would you go back to them, or would they come up to you?
Come up to us, you see, because with the gun, the vehicle and the gun in action, you see, you couldn't very well go off anywhere and leave the gun, because you had to get out, you see.
How far behind the gun would the Matadors be?
Oh, pretty fast, it was 200-300 yards. Something might cut maybe a quarter of a mile if there was any shelling going on in it, to keep out the way, to keep the vehicle safe.
Did you ever go out to visit the observation posts that you had at...
No, I didn't. Well, you couldn't really, you see, because when they went out, they had to try and go out to be unseen. Creep out or, you know, crawl out or whatever, you know, with the because if there was a lot of men going out with me, you'd be easily spotted. And on top of that, if you were driving a vehicle, you have to think about the dust coming up, you see, from the picking up through binoculars, you see.
So, now, while they were there, they were gradually improving the gunnery, according to the South Knots history. I mean, were you aware that they were getting more competent?
Well, actually, we were pretty confident when we left Mina, because we had a colonel there. He had a stint, a project called Stonk.
That's Elton, isn't it? That's the 7th Medium Regiment colonel.
And that was the order. It meant Stonk, which meant you had to pick, limber your gun up, go around and drive around a while, and then drop into action. You had to get that gun into action as quick as you would do with a 25-pounder. Which meant you were practically slinging 5.5 guns around like 25 pounds, which was a hell of an achievement, I'll tell you, because it was a tremendous gun.
Now, what about recreation while you were back, you know, during this period? Was there anything that, I know there was supposed to have been a football game.
No, all there was a football, that game was football, and that team and that, you know, just between the troops and that, that was, you know, that's all there was. You know.
Did you play?
No, not really, no.
Was there much German fire on your position or in the area of your position?
Well, yes, there was always. You were always on the alert. See, they were in the same position as us. And they used to do exactly the same things. Had guns firing through the night. The Harrison fire just to keep ourselves on, keep us on our toes. You see, so we supposed to return back to them just to do the same to them. You see?
And did they hit the position much? I mean, was there much damage or casualties caused?
No, not really. I can't ever remember with the fires. I can't ever remember any being actually knocked out with a direct hit. No.
What about air raids? Were there many of them?
That was regular. That was the second watch by them, the Stukas, because that was a saving actually with the Aussies. They loved our guns, but they hated what was brought behind with the Stukas, because they were always there in the dawn in the morning, and the sun was up about 1 o'clock, and then even when the sun was going down, they were always after, trailing after the mediums, after the medium regiment. They were actually about our biggest enemy.
You got used to them, though.
Oh, yeah. Used to them,
that, and they never hit the guns?
Not really, no. I can't remember.
The neatest
we got, one, and I looked up in the last, I said, they haven't started to die yet. She left right towards them. So if they did die, they would have died behind us. We didn't see the one waiting come behind them, and when we looked up, they still had these bombs just lying about 20 or 30 feet away from us. Duds. That's the way we wouldn't be here. And we screwed. So we looked. Then, of course, at night, we used to send what they call the butterfly bombs down, you know.
What were they?
Little anti-personal mines, they had wings that made the butterfly. You should just wave down gently to land on the top of the sand. Explode just like a hand grenade, you know. Shot them that. Try to do personal damage, personal injury to men.
Were they effective? Were there many casualties from them?
There was one or two rifles to casualties as well, I guess.
So what's the next thing you're moving through the summer in this static position?
Well, we're in that static position. You see, don't forget we were a medium regiment. And when you're a medium regiment, you're not in any particular division. You're what they call AGRA, Army Group World Artillery. And anyone that wants your support, a shout to help, you're going to support them. Because I remember at one particular time from Alameen, our troop, the NBA troop, we were picked, we had to go down onto the Qatar Depression.
This is before the Alamein attack.
Well, I mean, yes. We tried to make a bit of a push. We come round the edge of the line. We went down there to support that with the 2nd New Zealand Division. So
what do you remember of that?
Well, what I remember about that is, now that particular time, there were some engineers stationed not very far away. And they came up with bulldozers to dig gun pits for us. And the deeper they dug into the sand, from the top layer of sand yellow, go down and down, it got redder and red. And by the time we finished, where the four guns were, there was four red rings. You know, and everybody was sitting there saying, oh my God, what a target. In fact, we really got hammered there by the Stukas.
Yeah, that's in the history. It's in early September, I think. And what do you remember about that Stuka raid? Because they did hit the troop then, didn't they?
They hit the troop. I don't think anyone was actually knocked out.
It was more casualties.
A few casualties, a bit of damage done.
What were you doing during it?
Well, we were just standing behind the gun, just waiting to... We were just standing by in case that had put out all of a sudden. You know, but they did withdraw from that position because we were just drawing attention to the Stukas all the time. And bombing them. As I see these gun pits that they had, the sand being red, was just like, well, it's like four dartboards. We targets from the hit. We had quite a bit of trouble with the Stukas there.
Now, after that, the official history says that the troop was terribly shaken by this 3 days. Was the morale a bit shaky after that?
Well, it was a little bit shaky, you know, but you get over it. You know, it was a little bit nerve-wracking because it was so regular. You know, you can practically time them coming in and that, you know. And as I say, when we were drawn out from that position and we went back. Back up to the line again, you see if you want to move.
Back to your old position.
Back to your old position.
Now, what the prep thing, it was now definitely moving towards the battle of Ellen, the big offensive. And there was supposed to be an enormous amount of preparation going on.
Well, there was.
So they'd come up from behind and drop the guns, the shells off. And who would bury it? Would you help? And did you help? What other preparations were being made?
Ammunition. And, of course, now the quartermaster used to come along with what the rations you had, and there was biscuits and corned beef.
Now, you'd prepared forward positions, hadn't you?
Down the mean?
Yeah, the guns had forward positions prepared. Do you remember that?
I can't remember that one. No.
Fair enough. Now, what do you remember about the actual battle then?
Well, the actual battle actually was. It was an absolutely beautiful night, full moon, and it was a Friday, and it was a 20 to 10, 9:40. It was so quiet you could actually hear a feather land on the sand, and at exactly 9:40, 1,000 guns opened up. It was what they call hell let loose. It was thunder, and that went on 10 to 12 days, never stopping. Each gun, I remember there wasn't many orders given because all the orders had been out, had previously been given. But all the OPs had been out and reconnoitered. And each gun had so many rounds to fire on a position, switch, so many rounds on that position, switch, so many rounds on another position, and then start all over again.
So they had a gun program already?
They had a gun program all the way around.
Now, how did they there were 10 of them in the gun team, and you. How did you manage to keep this going for that length of time? Weren't the men exhausted?
Oh, well, you were exhausted, but you just had to get on with that, was it? And you were very, very rarely got any sleep. It was just one of those things that came. You work yourself, I suppose, into a position where you just take these things for granted, and they're natural.
Did you help on the gun?
Not at all. Not darling, you see, actually we weren't very far behind him when we were standing watching. You see, when we were standing beside the matter just in case anything went wrong. Because from thence on, from that particular night, you see, we were going into the unknown. And we didn't know what was going to happen. Things could have went his way. Thank goodness, thank God, went ours. We were standing just by the matter door just in case any gun had to get out. You know, any retail fire to come back into the room.
So it wasn't too bad for you. I mean, it may have been 12 days of continuous fire, whatever, but it wasn't too bad for the drivers. Were you still doing them some food, and taking them drinks and stuff? So what happened next then?
Well, of course, then after that, the breakthrough came. And I remember it was the 50 years came to all on our left flank to advance. And at that particular time, I remember the Japanese were getting down to New Guinea, near Australia. And the Australians wanted to get back home to to look after their own, to try and support their own company. Because once we got on the move in aluminium, we withdraw and we went back home, and that's the last we saw them. I liked the Australians very, very much. A good soldier, good fighter, good man.